Right, we're on. Welcome to another episode of The Visual Div. Aline, how you doing?
Good. Good morning.
Good morning. And
I think we need to say good evening as well.
Yeah, Tim, good evening. Good evening, Tim. How you doing?
So, yeah, all good. That's your leading, yeah, basically. No one knows who you are, just that you're at evening time. You're too tired to respond.
Yeah, but you can introduce yourself. Don't be shy. We got no rules on this pod at the moment, so go for it.
It's Tim from Australia, Tasmania. TimDaffX on Twitter. I run a little freelance studio called Flowcraft. Been watching the podcast for a little while and loving it. And keen to chat.
Yeah, nice. I'm just going to say that there is one rule. There's no fucking Saracens jerseys on this pod. What the hell is that with your three-star Saracens top? Sorry, Saracens are this like nemesis rugby team in England.
Really?
And this man is Welsh. Like, what's going on with the Saracens jersey?
I did have a sport question for you guys, actually. Maybe for more for Aline. Do you know who Jim Steins is?
Yeah.
You heard of Jim Steins?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is he like pretty famous in Ireland or?
Yeah, you'd recognize him.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, cool. Because he was like the first Irishman to win the Brownlow medal and the only one in Australian rules football. And
So there's like, was he Dublin football or Steins? Because there's now a heap of lads going over. So Australian rules football and is kind of like rugby and soccer. And then Ireland has a game that is similar to rugby and soccer called Gaelic football, Irish rules football.
Yeah.
And they're very, very similar. And Australia and Ireland play this international mixed game. I don't know if it's still going on, but it used to be on every year. But but Irish football is amateur and Australian rules football is professional. So every year, a heap of lads go over to Australia. Yep. Some of them make it, some of them don't, because it's very physically very different. But yeah, Steins was, I suppose, one of the trailblazers in that regard.
Yeah. And just larger than life sort of too. Yeah. And his family now has gone on since he passed away. Like, they've got a foundation named after him, raising a heap of money for, I can't remember exactly what he died of, but it was some type of cancer.
They still show that on here. Like if you tune in sometimes on a Saturday or Sunday here, you can see an Aussie rules game.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
And the Gaelic
On the Gaelic channel, yeah. So it's and there's a few of our one of Aoife's friends from back home in Mayo. She played for Ireland in soccer. She played for Mayo in Gaelic, and now she's over with Collingwood, I think, in Melbourne.
Oh, really?
Player over there. And it's just like, so she comes back here for the winter, I think. No, sorry, goes over.
Summer. She come back for the summer.
Yeah, you come back here for the summer.
Yeah. Play the Irish series.
Yeah, Irish series, and then does a bit of soccer. She plays for Bohemians in Dublin as well every so often. She's like super talented, you know?
Yeah.
And she's only, 26 or 27, and then she goes back over to Collingwood, I think, and just like trains like a pro, gets a tan, enjoys life over in the Aussie summer, and living the life.
The Irish Gaelic football women that go over because the season is split. I think the AFL, the Aussie Rules Women's League, is only like a 6 or 9 month season, and then they get to come back to Ireland and play amateur for 3 months. So there is a huge connection anyway. And it often would happen that guys would go over and maybe do 3 or 4 years and maybe be successful and maybe not, and then come back and play the Irish version again for like the end of their career.
Yeah.
So it's intertwined.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, there's
Aussie rules then, Tim? That's your sport?
Last year was probably the last year for me. it should have been the last year, a few years ago. Slowly going down divisions as I get older and like, yeah. Yeah, I was just like, it's hard. It's pretty hard.
It's a mental game. Like, it's played on a cricket crease. It's like, which is 200 meters long or something. It's absolutely massive. Like
an oval. Isn't it?
Yeah. So it's an oval, yeah.
Yeah.
So a Gaelic football pitch is 140 meters long. And then an Aussie rules pitch is even bigger than that because it's a cricket oval. Like if you compare that to like American football, which is 100 meters, like it's twice the length. It's got 15 players.
Eight per side.
Is there 18 players on a pitch?
Sorry, 22 per side, four on the bench, and then they change.
It's rotating subs. So it's 15 on the pitch at one time, isn't it?
18.
Yeah. Oh, 18. Yeah. Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to feel the team on a Sunday after a few pints.
Yeah. No, Sunday games were the worst thing ever invented. they're pretty few and far between in local football, though. So.
Oh, yeah. They're a big thing here. Like Sunday morning rugby and Sunday morning Gaelic football are a big thing in Ireland.
If you're getting paid for it, it's fine on a Sunday, I guess, for the pros. But. Yeah, it's never fun like going to work on the Monday and you're all beaten up.
Oh, I remember doing that in London. I remember playing at London Welsh and the amount of Mondays I had to call into work and say, look, my shoulder's out or my knee's fucked and by the end of it, they never believe me. Like, what are you doing at the weekend? Are you doing some MMA fighting or something?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm just playing amateur rugby down my local club and getting absolutely hammered.
Yeah.
Because the problem with amateur sport is we used to go to some sides like in East London and they were not interested in playing good quality sport. They were interested in taking our heads off.
Yeah.
And like you'd be at the bottom, you'd be on the floor, and all they want to do is put a knee in your face and keep you down there. And the ref, you know, the ref is so unfit and amateurs and is their mate. Running off down the thing, and you've got this number eight who's a monster just hammering you, and you're like, and then you get up, you got like your head is bashed, your knee is bashed, you got your ribs are gone, and then you have to walk in on Monday morning and look like you haven't been in a fight. It's hilarious.
It gets harder the older you get through.
So one of the last games of rugby I played was it was a relegation playoff for the town that I grew up in. I only played one season of rugby with them and like really like lower level rugby in the south of Ireland, but like a great club. And we played against, I think it was Bantry in Cork. So it was a Kerry team versus a Cork team. And Kerry and Cork always had a big rivalry, but it was a relegation playoff. So there was something to play for. And in this game, like the game was going on and everything was fine. There was, you know, it wasn't violent or anything, but I was at a ruck. So a ruck is a breakdown, like a scrimmage in American football, but you know, it's more dynamic. It doesn't stop. And their prop forward, which is the big guy. I don't know what is he, like 18 stone. I don't know what that is in pounds, but he's like the linebacker. He's a big pass.
Stone all pounds in Australia.
20 kgs. What would that be like? 150 kgs. 120 kgs, we'll call it. But he just lay on me. So I could literally just lay on me. And he wasn't like muscly. He was just chubby. And I'd try and move him and it'd be like pushing off like a pillow or something. And he literally, every time there was a breakdown, he just lay on top of me. It was as if there was a tactic, just like lie on that guy. Don't let him move. And I couldn't do anything. I'm only like 70 kgs. And there was this guy that was 120 kgs lying on top of me.
Yes.
And like as you said, Matt, like the referee is just like, what can you do?
To be fair, Aline, I think I could lie on you and keep you pinned down. So, you know, you had no chance with 120 kgs on top of you.
Yeah.
It's all good. Yeah.
Good fun though.
It's now moving into the realm of like living vicariously through your kids. It's like, right, in the UK, it's a case of like, You choose. I would have chosen rugby. It's like my boys are playing rugby and that's it. They're not playing soccer. I know nothing about soccer. And I think the rugby's given me so much. And then you come to Ireland, and it's like, right, they can play hurling, they can play Gaelic football, they can play soccer. It's like the world is their oyster. It's unbelievable. And like I got nephews now, and they're sort of like, what, 5, 7? And every day at the weekend, they're out. Like, we went down to stay there the other day. He goes, oh, yeah, Richard's got hurling on Sunday at 9. Then Sean's got Gaelic football at 10. And then we've got to take Richard to play rugby at 12. And then Sean's got a soccer game. It's like, Ireland is just this, like, sporting. It's like Australia to a certain extent. It's just, like, there's sport everywhere. And yeah, it's amazing. It's madness, yeah.
When I was a teenager, I was playing, even before that, I'd say from 9 or 10 till 18, like, I was playing sports 7 days a week, sometimes at the height of it, like when you're really young, probably with 6 or 7 different teams, like Gaelic football team, basketball team, soccer team, rugby team. I was doing rowing, bit of athletics, like, and you didn't even have to be good. You just had to turn up and do them. Like, and there was always, in every town, there's just this one like lunatic that just loved one sport. Like, we have a rowing club for some reason in our town. And then you go to like the local village beside me. So where I live now is like hurling, Gaelic football, but there's a ladies rugby team that started up in the village 10 kilometers away because there's like a Kiwi dad and he had a daughter and he's like, I'm starting up a women's underage rugby team. And now there's a women's rugby team there. It's like, it's brilliant. And there's really, there's great funding for those kind of things. So like, if you set it up, like the government will just throw money at the clubs for equipment and stuff. So it's, you know, it's not costing parents a huge amount. That's great.
Yeah. But Tim, you're big into your water sports, aren't you? Cause I guess you live in.
So you had, you know, that.
I've seen a few posts, I think, on Twitter, like, cause you're Tasmania, which is an island. It's a pretty big island, but it's just basically, you know, you have like the America's, is it the America's Cup? Well, yeah, no, not the America's Cup. You have like a big, Sydney to Hobart, which is your capital to Sydney. Yeah. And then you're out, do you do like kiteboarding or?
Yeah, kite surfing, kiteboarding. Doesn't Aylan or one of you guys do it or?
I surf on bodyboard. Yeah. But I've got a heap of buddies that are kiters and winds. And foilers
kiting's my main summer thing, but all my gear's busted at the moment, so I've got it repaired. Got it back about a month ago from the repair shop and it's busted again now. But yeah, diving as well. I love diving. I actually went diving yesterday. It was a public holiday here, so
Nice. My missus and my fiance is a free diver and a scuba diver.
Ah, cool. Yeah.
Free divers are nut, they're nutters. No, did you see Last Breath? Last Breath is on Netflix the other day.
Some pretty amazing stuff.
It's madness, that stuff. Like, it's madness.
It's supposedly a lot safer. According to her, it's a lot safer than scuba diving because you just have to come back up.
You just got to make sure you float and you're fine. Scuba diving, you can really ruin yourself.
Yeah, if you come up too quick with scuba diving, you could be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, because when you go down with free diving, you've got the one bit of air, but it compresses as you go down, whereas when you're in scuba diving, you can...
You do the opposite.
Yeah, so you can expand some air and go up and it just keep expanding. So, yeah, but it's pretty safe if you...
Yeah, both of them are safe because there's so much training involved.
Yeah.
But I'd say you've seen some mad stuff out in Taz underwater. It's pretty live water there.
Definitely. And deep. Yeah. Most of the diving we do is sort of under, 20 meters. So, but a lot of it's even under 10 meters. So we just do a lot of diving for crayfish here, which is like rock lobster and abalone. And then yesterday was a scenic dive. we went out and we went to a marine reserve to check that out. And then the guy kind of took us out. He's like, oh, there's a tire roof like 100 meters out. I went there 8 years ago. We're like, all right, sweet. Well, you lead the way. And we were underwater for about 45 minutes, still looking for this tire roof, like a reef made out of tires in the middle of a marine reserve. So I don't know what we're looking for that. And then anyway, we wasted a lot of air. So we went back to the shore and salvaged the dive, but saw, yeah, lots of little fish and that sort of thing. But the east coast of Tassie is where I do most of my diving, and it's pretty specky in terms of underwater caves and swim throughs and, you know, that sort of stuff. And even above the water is just like crazy. Like last weekend we went hiking at Tasman Peninsula, which is like the tallest sea cliffs in the southern hemisphere. And it was just, yeah, blew my mind. It was so crazy. Like, just everything about Tassie's great. I didn't grow up here, but I definitely love it.
Nice. Where'd you grow up?
Phillip Island, which is just an hour southeast of Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
That's
really pretty isolated, huh?
It's got a bridge to it. Like, it's kind of like Melbourne's playground in the summer. So it just gets hectic there and traffic jams. And it's just like takes you an hour to go and get the milk when it usually takes 10 minutes, sort of thing.
So typical kind of summer coastal area that everybody kind of goes to and parties in and then disappears for the winter.
Yeah. You've got like Melbourne's, it's like 6 million people living an hour away. So they all just, it's an awesome place, Phillip Island, still. Yeah. But Tassie's just like kind of like Phillip Island was when I was growing up, I reckon, like less people and just as much stuff to do.
Kind of harder to get to. You can't really get there in an hour, huh?
No. Well, it's an hour flight from Melbourne. So
Yeah,
it's an hour's flight. It's kind of an overnight boat trip though. You can get a car ferry across, but yeah. How are we going with Matties?
I think we lost him. We lost the host. He's got a message there saying he's having internet issues. So he was giving out to me about west of Ireland.
He said you were going to pause and he kept like,
That's all good. He'll probably connect back in a sec. But there was one thing there. I have family down in Adelaide. My uncle is down in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's down there in the Port Lincoln in Coffins Bay.
Yeah, okay.
Like 7 hours west of Adelaide.
Yep.
He's been there for nearly 20 years. And
Coffins Bay.
Yeah.
What a name. That's just the name Coffins Bay, like.
Yeah. Wonder how they picked that up. Like it's But come here, like so I suppose we you're doing some pretty mad stuff with Webflow. Especially with the Webflow app stuff. Like, tell us a bit more about what you've got going on there.
Yeah, I've obviously got the SVG import app. Mm-hmm. Have you used that one?
Yeah.
So that turned out to be like great success, I guess, in terms of got really good feedback on it and. Yeah, just everyone seemed to like it a lot. It's funny how that app was born, though, because I was actually working on this Icon Library app. And then all of a sudden there was, like, Icon Library apps popping up left, right, and center. So I'm like, oh, God. And then, Timothy Ricks posted this video, and he was on YouTube, and he's, like, manually placing his SVGs, like, element by element and adding the paths to them manually. And I said, oh, can actually do that for you with my app. And then I just forked it from the icon library to that SVG import app. And yeah, it's been pretty popular. And I've got another one that I've just launched like a landing page for about 20 minutes before this podcast.
Oh, nice. Exclusive.
Yeah. So, if you want to check it out, it's cutcopy.io, and this is going to be my second app. And it's very much aimed at like the Webflow developers, like, you know, you and me, sort of, or us, just trying to like get rid of shortfalls in the designer, which, you know, may take, I don't know, 6 months, may take 5 years for the Webflow guys to you know, implement something. And that's not because they're not working. Like they've been doing awesome feature releases and stuff. But like, yeah, now that we've got the APIs for the developer ecosystem, it's just opened up a whole new realm of possibilities there. And
What does CutCopy do?
At its core, so at launch, basically all it's going to do is copy attributes from one element and then paste them on another, but selectively. So it's probably easier for us. Can you screen share in this?
Yeah, but majority of this is going to be audio, so we might have to explain.
Yeah, Roger. Yeah, so if
I had a heap of attributes for like HTMX and something was working, instead of having to copy the actual div that's associated with or the embed, you can copy those attributes over and paste it into another div. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, in certain situations, you would obviously just duplicate the whole div or whatever, which is the common use case. But, I found it when working with SVGs and starting to animate SVGs and stuff, it's just really time-consuming to apply a bunch of attributes to something, you know, even if you've got it over there. It's basically going to be like a shortcut tool for that. Super simple.
That's really cool because, I like using, like a div or an element with the custom attributes, but it's really nice building it out and populating it, but it's a balls kind of re-manipulating or editing or, you know, if you're testing, for example, and you're like, you want to get rid of this and try it again. And sometimes the custom embed is an easier solution because you're actually just front-end coding there. You're just coding vanilla HTML and putting attributes in and follow it and read it much easier. Like a real simple thing that often happens, just even from the way I'm typing quickly, is that I might, especially with using HTMX attributes, I often write HS- instead of HX. Which just completely breaks what you're doing. And when it's in like an embed, it's easier to read than when it's in the custom attributes. They're I suppose just like Webflow problems we were kind of talking about a few times, Matt and I, about how the Webflow community is almost like really pushing the limitations of the tool. And it's not that the tool isn't good, it's just that people are becoming really creative and just pushing the boundaries, really, which is awesome. Kind of like, and this is a solution for that, what you've kind of come up with there.
Yeah, yep, 100%. It's just a developer shortcut, really. Like, so,
but Tim, where do you get these ideas from? And like, because obviously Webflow is this low code tool, it's meant. But to develop these apps, surely you've got a developer background, I guess, and you've come into Webflow that way rather than like say there's a lot of designers come in, and it'd be super cool to learn how you've got into that space. Because like Alan, you came from a sort of full stacky kind of development background. I've come from a product manager front end background, but not too technical. And then it's great to see guys like yourself who come in with a little bit more of an understanding of the inner workings, and then you can build really cool stuff, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So like before Webflow, I worked with an open source CMS called Drupal. If you guys might have heard of, which is a super, super powerful framework, and you know it's huge. It's nothing like the size of WordPress, but it's really huge, and it allows you to build really complex applications as well as like your standard sites and stuff. But you know, you do have to code your CSS and you know, kind of like everything Webflow does, you've almost got to code that. The CMS side of it is similar, so setting up data structures and that sort of thing. Probably you can do a bit more complex things with Drupal, but that's what kind of taught me the database CMS side of things, was just building sites with Drupal. And then theming the sites with Drupal was kind of teaching me the CSS and HTML side of things, as well as like JavaScript just kind of comes naturally with building websites, like as you guys kind of know, I think. Before that, like I think I did one or two WordPress sites, and just like that was like, I don't know, 15 years ago. And yeah, did my head in from day dot. So like, I was out of WordPress pretty quick. Drupal's kind of got similar issues with security maintenance and that sort of thing, but it's a lot, I don't know, WordPress is probably fine now, but essentially you got to pay someone to look after your site for you, or else it's just going to turn to shit. Whereas Webflow, like obviously we're all paying them billions of dollars a year to take care of all those things for us. So that's kind of how I came in. Then I was working at an agency in Hobart for 5 years, and they specialized in Drupal as well as like print design and stuff, and then kind of introduced Webflow to them on a couple of little small projects, and yeah, they didn't fully want to go with it. And then, yeah, I actually ended up going, taking a job with a school camp company for a year, which ended up just being a massive loss of money for me. Fuck around. And then after that, I just like thought I'd try freelancing, and that was like 2018. The end of 2018, I think. And just went hard at Upwork, and then kind of got my first couple of good gigs through there. And yeah, but just wanted to focus on Webflow. Like, as soon as I learned about Webflow, I knew I wanted to be working in it, because I was so sick of Drupal maintenance and module updates and shit just breaking. Like, I just wanted the back end, like the true back end that is the back of Webflow, like that we don't see. That's what I needed. Whereas Drupal, we were managing, you know, server infrastructure. Like, yeah, I don't know.
It's not talked about a lot, though, is it, in the Webflow community? The fact that what you get with Webflow. And sometimes we don't even tell our clients about this, because, you know, sometimes we don't really understand it to be, you know, unless you've lived in it like you have, we don't understand that there's so much of that heavy lifting and the complex, kind of maybe boring stuff. You know, obviously a lot of people enjoy that stuff, but we don't enjoy that stuff. They do all that so we can get on and do what we think is the enjoyable, sexy stuff on the front end, and the kind of, I guess, just below the surface type CMS. And I guess, like, this, you know, the apps that you're building, and then, you know, things that other people are building are starting to make that a little bit more powerful. And like, Alan, you've been exploring HTMX recently, and just the ability for us to tap in, like make Webflow, the basics of Webflow, that much more powerful, means that we can go and build some pretty, pretty amazing things that maybe 10 years ago you would have had to reach for something like a Drupal to be able to do, you know? It's pretty cool. But it's like, I think, Alan, we've talked about it before, haven't we, about how Webflow, like the community, making things like the SVG app, or, you know, they'll look at the attributes app that you've got now and go, and they'll be like purring over it going, hey, which bits of this can we bring into the app because it's going to be popular, or it's going to help our, you know, make us more of a pro tool. And it's super interesting to see which way it goes, because there are some apps out there that are really cool, but they don't get used very often. And then there are going to be apps there that we start to use a lot. Or like Alan, you might use this app a lot now, but you're probably 1% of Webflowers because of the use cases you have. But in 5 years' time, you might be 20% of the Webflowers because we're all a little bit more familiar with the way the attributes work and integrating attributes using APIs, all that kind of stuff. And it's super interesting, isn't it? Because it's like
but if you look at Webflow pre-Wist and Webflow post-Wist, like, it's two different worlds. Like, still the amazing design stuff is there and the animation stuff is there, but it's becoming like, yeah, it's just changed a lot. And that kind of started with MemberStack and Outsetta and, you know, by putting a layer of complexity on top of what Webflow have. And this kind of, I was thinking about like the app marketplace, and it's almost like, it's obviously not open source, but it's very close to open source. Do you know, like, they're given the API, letting people explore, and then they're protecting the integrity of Webflow by, I'm sure there's tons of apps that are going through that are not getting approved. And the ones that are getting approved, obviously being verified to a certain extent, and then they're launched. And, you know, that kind of, it's similar. It's not the same, but it's similar to like open source, where you could like download a version of, make a fork of the version of what you're working on, and you can make iterations to that, and you can, you know, show that to others, and if they think it's good enough, they can, it'll get pushed to the next version of that particular project. So it's like a way of keeping the integrity of like a private closed tool, but then allowing for the likes of Tim to come up with creative ideas for Webflow problems, and maybe they'll get acquired. Maybe they'll get integrated. Maybe they'll steal the ideas. I don't know, but you don't know what's going to happen. Probably, but I think it's awesome that they've done that.
I think the developer ecosystem, Aidan, you're right. It's like, to me, it's the best move Webflow's made in several years. Like, localization, I thought, was a super smooth product launch. Like, that, yeah. I don't know, I've used that, like, that was unreal. But yeah, the APIs for me has just opened up such a massive, it's just onboarded like a completely new ecosystem of users of Webflow that can build apps for it now, instead of just using the tool, they can get involved with it. Like, you know, how many Shopify developers would there be that don't use the Shopify tool, but they build apps for shops, if you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think, just like you said, it's kind of like open source, and all of a sudden they've got tens of thousands of contributors that have like that direct line into the core product.
But on that front, like, what is the process for getting an app from your idea one day and going, damn, I wish I could do this, through to me being able to use it on the other side of the world in my own Webflow app? Like, what is that? Take us through that process, because I haven't actually spoken to anyone who's built an app and known what the pro, because from the outside, as a Webflow power user, but not someone who thinks I could build an app, it's like going, wow, that you got to be super, super complex, super smart. Like, what do you have to go through? What are the steps you go through?
do you mean like in terms of submitting to the App Store or the development of it? Like,
well, just like, yeah, from a blank page through to actually getting it on the App Store. Is it like, what do you have to be a proper developer to do this stuff?
You know? Not really. Like, to be honest, like, technically, like, you could actually build a Webflow app in Webflow, you know, a super basic one, because, like, so how you submit to the App Store is you upload this thing, just it's called Pup Bundle. So it's just bundle.zip. It's just a zip file. And in that's just, could be at the most minimum, just an index.html file and an index.javascript file.js. And that could, like, just say, hello, world, you know, and you could submit that and run that in Webflow in the little app window. So all that little app window is doing is loading an external website.
Okay.
That's basically what's going on. So you could, I don't know, you could just do plug a landing page. You know, you could plug a little page that you've designed in Webflow to be that dimensions, and then export it from Webflow and run it in the app ecosystem, I guess, by, you know, going through integrations, uploading. So it's just a website, really, but through that window, it has access to the Webflow APIs. So it doesn't, you know, it's not like any website can call the designer that you're viewing. It's like got to be there, but that stuff's way above my pay grade, but that's all it is in the Webflow app. But in terms of like my process, I actually would have to thank Diego, always bugger up his last name, but Diego Del Toro, legend from Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
So I sort of dived into Webflow development, app development, when I first landed, just thinking, oh, I wonder if I can build this. I wonder if I can build that. And I ended up building this whole icon library, but it was just kind of like designed on the fly as I coded it. And then I showed him and showed Diego and a few others. And yeah, it was kind of like, oh, look, this is all off and that. But in my head, I was just like, yeah, that's fine. Like, that'll look fine later. But he's like, just told me just take a step back and actually design what you want the final thing to be and then go to build it. So, yeah, definitely taking a step back and just design what you want the experience to be, the Webflow app in Figma or Sketch or whatever you use with Napkin, and get some feedback on that if you want to, or if you're completely happy with it, then start looking at engaging with a developer, or if you're confident in development yourself, you know, it literally like that end up that bundle at the end that you submit to the App Store is literally just HTML and JavaScript and CSS. So there's nothing magic about it really, apart from that, you know, you've got to call certain APIs and things like, but yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Like, kind of, if you know how to, if you've got a rough idea of code, but like both of you guys do because you use Webflow, so you know what HTML, JavaScript, CSS is. Obviously, the more complex an app gets and the more things that it has to talk to is, you know, how many worms are in the can.
That's super interesting, because like I keep saying that like Webflow is a gateway drug to coding, you know?
Yeah.
It can, like, you know, you start off, you could start off having very, I don't know, you see a video about like a mega menu or this amazing animation, and you could have zero understanding of HTML and CSS, and you could build it out and it would work. But your CSS is shite, to be fair, but does it matter because it works?
Yeah.
Maybe initially not, but then you'll realize that there are things that you'll start to realize that when you try and fix something, like edit something, that color doesn't change in that background for all of them. So then you'll realize, learn about classes. And then you might find out about, I don't know, like the FinSuite naming convention or MAST, and then you'll find out about custom attributes by FinSuite. And the thing with custom attributes about FinSuite is that they're really amazing. But in my head, I'm like, I want to know why that works. Yeah. Why has this, like, let's use the slider, for example. Why do I have to put a list, my collection list at the bottom of the slider? And how does it go into the slider? And you realize it's on page load, that it pulls it from here, moves it to there. And then you're starting learning about fetching and putting and all these kind of things. And that from there, like you could code your own slider. And then the next step is kind of like what you're saying. If you have that very not rudimentary understanding of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, it's not that hard from your experience to start moving into very basic app development for Webflow, whether or not Webflow will accept your Hello World app that's in index.js and index.html is another story, but that's pretty awesome that the next step is there, that it's and you're saying it's inviting, I suppose, is the word.
For sure. And you can run your app just in your workspace, like during development. That's how you develop them. So like you can play around and learn how to develop Webflow apps, you know, in your own workspace. And there's no approval process for that. You've just got to muck around until it works.
And then if you create your own app and you publish your site to a live domain, does that work?
Well, it's not connected to the site at all, really. It's just all on, you know, some apps probably are like Wizt and that sort of thing, but like the core designer experience apps, designer extension apps, sorry, that they just run in the designer. So they don't actually talk to the front of your website.
Okay.
Unless you've set some, you know, wormhole up, like, which is called a data client in Webflow's API language world. So you can build a data client app, which is a bit more technical, and that's allows you to talk to the CMS, talk to localization, all of that stuff. And then there's a designer extension, which is literally just a website running in the little window in Webflow. And you combine the two of those to talk to and from the backend. But SVG import, for example, doesn't need to talk to anything. There's just no authorization. It just only deals with like the elements that it can see on the designer page. If that makes sense.
Yep.
So things like, I don't know what's, another app that I can think of, like Icon Drop by Chris Dossett from Saddle Framework Creative Mules, I think his agency's called. He built an icon library app, but you can actually copy. He gave me a demo. I think you can copy icons from one project and paste it into another. Which sounds just like you can do normally, but there was something that like it was talking, they were talking to each other. The two sites were talking to each other.
So, oh, yeah.
You know,
so there'd be no duplication and stuff.
Yeah. So it was something along those lines.
Because that's a big issue with going from one project to the next is duplication of CSS, even of the duplication of animations if you do it incorrectly. Mm. Like, so that's super interesting.
Yeah. So that's where like you'd have two designers open with two designer extensions, which is the visual app that you see, and then there'd be a data client kind of connecting the two of them. If that makes sense. It's just I'd probably make it sound more complex than it is, but
you should do that because if it's too easy, people won't hire you, you know.
Yeah. That'd be good. If anyone wants Webflow apps developed, they can reach out because I really enjoy it. It's a lot more fun than yeah, some of the other things I have to do.
I know, but I was going to ask though. I think isn't that an industry, kind of an industry sector waiting to explode? Is
yeah, I think so. Huh?
You know, like because even there
custom,
are so many
custom apps for custom problems. Like you know,
well, if you think about it, like designers, a lot of designers will come to us and say, look, can you build my Figma file and turn it and bring it alive in Webflow? And we go, yeah. And they love doing the design and we love doing the dev. Likewise, you know, clients come to them and it's just this whole thing. And it's just the app thing feels like the next bit up where it's like, hey, Tim, I've got this idea. I've sketched it out on my napkin or Figma or Sketch, as you said. And can you build it for me? And how much would it cost to build? Yeah. And then I guess it comes down to like when the monetization element of it, because you know, your apps at the moment, they're all free of charge, but I suppose you might be putting a layer of like a Reloom-esque layer on where you have to pay £5 a month to have this attribute app or whatever. Yeah. And this time next year, Jesus, like it, you could be building apps every single day because people can come to you with the ideas, the design, and they make money out of it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a market there, I reckon. Like, there probably already is. Like, I think, like, Web by Kagan might be getting some just strictly app development work. Like, kind of heard on the grapevine, which is, like, fair enough with his YouTube channel is doing, like, mostly coding, and he's built a couple of killer apps as well. But, yeah, I think there'll definitely be that market there. Like one thing with the app marketplace is like it's kind of like when it launched, it was like this big land grab for space in the app store. And there is a few apps that just like have been built by non-Webflow people and you can kind of tell. Whereas like if you look at like Diego's Better Shadows app, it's just like this killer shadow creating app and it's you know, built by a Webflow developer for Webflow developers type of thing. Like the same with SVG importer. It's like, oh, well, there's this one thing we can't currently do. You know, here's a way to do it. Whereas, yeah, some of them, like there's a particular icon library app which saves the icons you upload to the assets panel and hard codes colors into them and stuff, which is kind of just like, anti the way to do it in Webflow, really, like versus using either embeds like SVG embed in an embed element, like with Reloom icons, or whether you're importing like a raw SVG. So there's Webflow developers who've been using the tool for years and know it back to front. I think they're in the best position to make better apps for it.
I'd like that take because whenever I go on the app store I feel like someone hasn't taken the design seriously because like if I want to find your app now you know like I can take it I can find it now because I know what I'm looking for but if I want to type if I watch want to find something to do with SVGs I don't actually know where to go like there's no search there's no filters. There are filters, there's categories, but they're not really that intuitive. You know, they've still got HubSpot as the new and noteworthy, which obviously everyone knows the HubSpot app doesn't work. And like there's lots of stuff that I feel like they've stuck up this page and then they've just forgotten about it. And I feel a little bit miffed really because behind every app, or at least most of the apps, there's a lot of hard work going in. One is like designing it, two, building it, but also, as you said, like making sure it works with the natural UX of the Webflow designer and isn't just, an app for an app's sake. It's built by people who use it every day. And I feel like they could at least go on and give you a bit of a cool app store where it's like, oh yeah, I can search for SVGs and I get six SVGs. And then maybe there's a review system where likewise I can go onto this icon store and go, hey, it's great, but it hard codes it into my asset panel, so I can't change the color. For like, because I think that would just it would hold up the standards. It would like make it easy for us to find, but also it would like self-regulate. It would mean that, you know, the good apps get the showings and the bad apps get not showed and not used, and you know, that kind of way. And it's, I wonder why they haven't put that much thought and effort into it, because it feels like you could do it. Like, I could build, I'm not just doing my own trumpet here, but I could do a search and filter system for this in half a day. It wouldn't be hard to do.
The FinSuite filter attribute.
I could use a FinSuite filter attribute. I could use JetBoost.
Let's build a Webflow apps like .com or what is it? With reviews and stuff. But to be fair to like the team, I think it was like six people on the team that delivered the Webflow APIs.
Wow.
Which is just mental. I'm pretty sure that they are that's like the next push for them is to make the app store better or the marketplace better. But yeah, I think like to get that version one API out the door, there was only like a handful of guys and girls.
Matt, like I remember when the Shopify app store was released, it was a fucking shit show.
There's a shit show, but like when Apple released the first iPhone, everyone was like, oh my God, if they released it today, they'd be like, what disaster of a phone is this?
I remember a couple of those early iterations of the iPhone and people were bitching about them as well.
But you build on the shoulder of giants, as they say. So like, look what Shopify have done. Don't invent the wheel. Just put a search in there. If I want to type in SVG and I get the SVG importer in there, happy days. Just like, honestly, anyone could build that in a half a day is being generous. Like, and I'm not being disingenuous here. It's like, we could do a live build of the Webflow app.
I can't believe you're like, there's going to be some heavy hitters inside in Webflow are going to be like, all right, Matt, let's do a live stream and watch you build.
Nelson has done it. Nelson did it. The only trouble Nelson's got, I suppose, is he doesn't necessarily have an up-to-date stream of the apps coming through and he has to check it all the time. But even then, he might be able to put a little bit of a web scraper on top or something and pull that stuff in. And it's, at the end of the day, like, hey, I do enjoy hammering Webflow. So.
I've noticed that in past episodes.
So I do apologize, but you know, we've got to keep them keen. And like, I really love the idea that, like Tim, you can walk in, come up with an idea, build it and put it live. And if we find out about it, great. If we don't find out about it through our social channels, it's actually quite a bit harder to discover, you know? And it's that kind of stuff that I feel like Webflow should just get behind Tim, get behind WebBay, get behind Diego, and like push. Like they did with HubSpot when it launched, you know, like, hey, HubSpot, wait. Well, it didn't work.
Yeah. But
aside from that, at least they did a launch for HubSpot. Like they should do, you know, spotlights for your app now and, you know, critique it a little bit more. And, you know,
I think the HubSpot app was a bit disappointing with just that it was still up there and new and noteworthy and it was busted. But
I'm actually on the the App Store page here at the moment. And so new and noteworthy, we've got Figma to Webflow, we've got HubSpot, Microsoft Clarity, which I'm pretty interested in. Input Flow, they're the multi-step form, and then Campaigner, no idea what that is. And OptiBase. And then underneath, we've got apps, and it's free and paid. And this is all. And if there's like newest, there's a filter of newest, popular, Z to A and A to Z. And there you are in the top 10 of popular. So it's probably not perfect, but they must be tracking downloads or something in order for that to happen. You're up there, you know, you're above Wizd, man. You know, you're eighth is HubSpot. So for some reason, it's still popular, even if it's not working. But like, you know, there you go, just one behind web-based ClipPad.
Got received well like that for sure. I have to say it too, like we've been ragging on the App Store for a bit, but I'm pretty sure like the guys were having to hand code this page for a while just because of, you know, the way it was set up. So like every app profile in there was almost, I'm pretty sure they were typing out HTML for it. A little bit better about
it. Have they heard of this tool called Webflow where it has a CMS and components and stuff?
Like, it was just all static. Static Webflow pages. But I'm pretty sure they're putting a push into the actual marketplace site this year. But I don't know because I can't get this webinar recording yet. But anyway, I'm pretty sure they are working on it.
Yeah. So have you got any more ideas for Webflow apps up your sleeve at the moment? Is there a long pipe of them on your to-do list or?
We'll check out cutcopy.io for anyone. So this is kind of a bit of a teaser in terms of the feature set there, which is variable site to site variable copy paste. So this is a tool that I've just come up with this idea because I was retrofitting Lumos 2 for a site, and even with the Figma to Webflow app, it falls down in a lot of areas when it comes to variable import. So having like a bunch of variables on a site and being able to paste them, copy them from one site and paste them to another, just in like the setup of a site rather than having to clone the whole project, is what I'm building there. There's some more stuff that I probably won't go into, but more stuff that I want to be hopefully able to charge some money for at some point.
I think the variables thing is really interesting because, Alan, we were talking about it last episode. Yesterday, we recorded an episode about talking about how the way that variables interact with the Webflow UI in some instances is a little bit janky. A little like the name doesn't fit in, and you know,
that's
those kind of things.
Number one tweet for the week. I think every week you're on a bit.
It just bugs me because I open up a project and.
Yeah,
and
it bugs you. Dad joke of the week.
Glad I'm a dad, though. I'm so glad I'm a dad because now I can do dad jokes without any comeback. Whereas before, I was just not very funny. Whereas now I can do dad jokes and it's okay.
Yeah, the dad jokes have already been there. They've always been there, but the children weren't.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Tim, we were saying about the UI and the the idea that I could create a little, almost like a starter kit of variables. So I go, okay, this is the way I want to name them because it works with the UI. And then when I want to pull them into a project, you're right, I don't have to clone a project.
Yep.
I can just bring that set of variables in, and then off I go, and I can just attach them to the relevant classes. That would be epic.
Yeah. So that's it. That's the thinking behind that feature. And that one's a bit more complex, but definitely it's like a time-saving thing for either project setup or project, you know, retrofitting, like if you're doing a redesign on an existing Webflow project or cleaning up a template marketplace project or something, like, just, you know.
You know what?
If you're listening on audio, while Tim was saying template marketplace cleanup, he had a little smirk on his face, just to let you know. And I think he represents a general feeling that the template marketplace is not the place you go to find well-built Webflow sites.
Well, that made me, when you were talking before, Alan, there was, you said something and it made me laugh because I was like, oh, that's kind of like that. ethos of the template marketplace. As long as it looks good.
My example of the someone who comes in, builds something, it looks good, and the CSS is all over the place.
They've got standards, but like I just did a site with a template based project, and it's the last one I'm doing because it was a fucking nightmare trying to work out how it all went together. There's classes like above 680 pixels drop, like breakpoint labels named in the classes. Like it was just,
it's all over the place.
But like, client first is at least you can, like, I've built a lot of client first sites and you can understand it and follow it. But the template marketplace, you don't really know what you're going to get.
And usually, from my experience, once you get a template, it's been hacked by the owner who bought the template, and then they're coming to you with a more robust idea of what they want. And it looks good in their end, but man, there's a lot of work to fix that, or maybe even, like you were saying, retro. That'd be pretty nuts if there was something out there to retrofit it to another naming convention. Might be pretty tough. Even if you were might be easier, but if you had like an updated framework to retrofit a previous job that you did, like going back and looking at client first V1, and retrofitting it for V2 or V3, or even doing the same with Mast or Lumos. Those would be super powerful tools because if that was a pay-per-use, like the amount of time that would take for you to do that versus, and I know FinSuite have helped that with their CSS renaming tool.
I'm just like battling to release this one little SVG feature app, whereas Joe was like back 5 years ago. He's like making big websites, but also just releasing these tools for the whole community for free for years. Like, I just don't know, like he's on another planet, that dude, because he's just like the stuff that he can do. Like, he's obviously making a living through Webflow, but at the same time, he's got this team just like punching out attributes and all these like free solutions for us before the app marketplace was like, you know, where you went. Well, it still is, I guess, for FinSuite, like filters and stuff.
It's pretty cool, though, like those kind of leaders. You've got like the FinSuites, the Relooms, the WebBays.
Refocus in Europe are doing some
Refocus.
Stuff.
Flowbase in Aussie. Who runs Flowbase? Tom, he was there way before anyone. And
the OG component library.
Oh, he just quietly goes around his business and just, and you go on Flowbase and you go, whoa, this is like a new world of Webflow goodies. And
he's such a good designer too. Like that's the foundation, is just good design and just,
yeah. And then obviously Reloom. I've just come up with an idea. Okay. What if you could take two Reloom components. Okay. And the way Reloom, and it's so my only bugbear and why I don't use Reloom that much is because section hero 1 and section hero 2, the only difference is section hero 2 will have some buttons and section hero 1 won't have any buttons. But all the classes within those components are named differently. They're all named section underscore hero 1 underscore whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other ones are hero underscore 2, da da. What if you could create an app that goes into a project and goes, right, look, section hero 1 has exactly the same attributes as section hero 2.
Hmm.
Just call them section hero 1.
Yeah, like that a cleanup tool.
Yeah, like a cleanup tool of like make it dry. Don't repeat yourself.
Hmm.
And so, because that's what masters
class. Yeah. Find duplicate classes, but find
duplicate classes that have duplicate values, essentially, identical values, and then go, clean it up and apply them. And before you know it, you could probably, any Reloom site you look at, you could probably clean up like 30-40% of the CSS
definitely
based on that.
Definitely put mine up and do the rest. No matter how hard I try, I'm like, always end up.
But
with
imagine
a
that. Imagine that though. It kind of like the way that a lot of us, the reason I use Mast, I prefer using Mast over Client First. Well, not necessarily Client First, but say Reloom is, I feel like it's a little drier. It's a little bit like the layout, which I use on everything, is the same on every, the class names are the same. But if you like, Webflow prides itself on using class systems. It's not abstracted like a Wix or a Framer where you can't, and if you could have a tool that went in and just tidied it up for you, like there's plugins for Framer that go and rename all your layers and make sure it all works. Have that for Webflow. I would buy that every single project. I would spend $50 on at the end of the project, pay my money, press the button, ding, 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 go, right, happy days, I look awesome. My client, any Webflow developer that came on, they wouldn't find any div 6, 7, 9s that I've forgotten about. That would be a money maker, like a proper money maker.
Tim's there, got the pen out and he's taking notes.
That's probably possible, but I reckon it'd be a hectic thing to build. Like, think of all the different edge cases and scenarios you have to account for.
Combo classes, utility classes.
Pay $50 and get the poking noises.
Anyway, thank you very much for coming on. Anyway, Tim, it's been a delight. Exploring the Webflow app ecosystem. I think, like as you said, it's probably only at the start of what it's going to be. And it's pretty cool that you're giving it a go and tapping into it and seeing what happens. And I guess that's only going to put you in good stead for when it does explode and become a little bit more of a integral part of our build. So,
For sure. I guess would encourage anyone with an idea just to have a crack at it. Yeah, for sure. Like, even just use the boilerplate stuff that Webflow gives you. Good way to learn. Like, I didn't go to university or anything to study how to write code. I taught, learned myself, like you guys, probably similar. Or even if you're not, it's like I say to people, some people who ask me about how did you learn to work on the internet, and it's like, literally, like, there's a lot of information on the internet, and probably the most information, like the one topic that is the biggest, probably besides porn, is like how to build the internet. So how to make websites, how's the internet work? But it'd have to be like the biggest topic on it. So there's plenty of free information there. I think Rand Segal's course was the first thing I ever paid for in terms of a course. And that was literally almost just to thank him for all the free stuff we get about.
That's pretty cool.
You don't need to buy courses. Like, the guys like Timothy Ricks and WebBay and, just heaps of crew.
And I think the key thing as well is just is doing what you've done and just doing it,
Yes.
A lot of us. Learn as you do. A lot of us. We're lucky enough that we get clients and we're able to do stuff for our clients, but to do it on your own and not get paid, just tinker away, is really hard to do. Like, Ali knows I've got a list of ideas coming out my backside that I have. I'm like, oh, I'm so excited about this, I'm going to build it. And then 3 months later, I haven't built it. I should now go, right, I'm going to build an app for the App Store and just go and do it and just do it. Because it's not going to be the best app. It's not going to be the worst app, but it's just going to be an app, and I'm going to learn so much from doing it. Like I am at the current, I'm working on a current project with where we're using HTMX. And I couldn't get it. Like, Aline, yeah. you were going like, this is how it works. I was like, no, Aline, you just teach me like I'm a 5-year-old. And then when I started doing it for real, I was like, ah, okay. I understand now. It works. And
yeah.
That's the brilliant thing about, I guess, learning yeah. Webflow or learning app is you can do it. You don't need anything other than a laptop, really, do you? So that's why, like, people who don't go to uni, it doesn't make any difference at all. It's all about just getting your head down, reading, doing, practicing, making mistakes, blowing things up, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's reminded me that post you put up today about Chrome extension for that ex-Adam guy or Adam X.
Yeah.
His stuff looks really interesting. With like he's built with library for Webflow.
Their stuff is so cool. Yeah, open source JavaScript framework that basically brings application functionality into Webflow. Yeah, it's super cool. I haven't fully explored X-Atom, but I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah. I just had a look at it. Yeah, sorry. I thought it might have been a HTMX thing.
No, it's more just vanilla JavaScript kind of approach to things. But that's the thing with HTMX is that it's backend agnostic. So if there is a way of connecting like a third party database using X-Atom, then you can use HTMX if you wish for the front for like the AJAX kind of. Get some posts and stuff. So yeah, you can definitely do that. Like the two things that I'm super excited about at the moment is Alfie and X-Atom.
Alfie, John is like, he's just been this like crazy stuff for years. And it was awesome to see him have like that success with the Framer stuff that he's doing because he was just building these crazy tools for Webflow for so long and not getting a lot of traction with them apart from like Alfie. And it was a shame because like what he was actually building was crazy powerful stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like the missing link really for that like really secure backend connection from and like you can use like Outsetta and MemberStack or you can create your own authentication and use the Alfie tool. I'm really, really excited for when the latest version of that comes out. I've been chatting away. I haven't fully seen it yet. No, and if I get a little secret view, I'll let people know. I'm pretty sure I'm gonna blow it up. Like get really excited because it's
Aline gets really excited every so often and you just get these WhatsApp messages and he just sends you this recording of what he's done. He's like, it's like he's discovered gold in his back garden. I was like, all right, I'm going to open this Dropbox video and I'm looking at it and half of it, I don't really understand what's going on, but then something appears on the screen and you just hear Aline's voice going, and look, it appears. Great. It's brilliant. It's like a little kid in a candy shop. It's like they found their favorite sweet and it's there and they've made it happen. But the stuff that Virat, so Virat is behind X-Atom.
Yeah.
And the X-Sync stuff he's just done. I tried it out a couple of weeks ago and it's brilliant. It just does what it says on the tin. He's like, because I was chatting to him about it. I said, look, this is what I would love. I'd love like a, because Reloom do it as part of their app. But you have to be a paid for member to use that.
Yeah, class.
And I love it because I built a little component library. But when I started using it, I realized if I didn't dedupe stuff, the component library was a bit useless. So so Virat's come along and he goes, yeah, my team, we use it internally. We're gonna build it, and he just built it and put it out there. And now I think the tweet this morning, wasn't it? He's getting more beta testers.
Yeah, I installed it after your tweet. And
yeah, it works. Like, it works a treat.
Yeah.
It's very very basic. Doesn't tell you what's really going on. There's not many settings. There's no settings, I think. You can maybe turn it on and off.
Yeah.
But when I copy a component in, it inherits my styles from my from my project, and off I go. And
yeah,
if you think about that Reloom thing awesome. We were talking about, it's just, and variables, you know, if I could copy in a load of variables from another project, and then I can copy in components, and those components use the same variables, but they inherited all the values. Before you know it, you're building some very powerful, quick stuff for clients who want another site or to extend their site, or, you know, you're handing over to a client, say, look, if you have this component library and this Chrome extension and this element here, you can just copy new components in and it becomes your new component library extension almost. And it's like super powerful. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So,
One thing about exciting times. Yeah.
But
I could probably do a part two. We'll just keep talking shit about when.
probably a few people have tuned out by this stage.
Or maybe once you started talking about that. What was that sport you said at the start? You had like cricket, rugby, Gaelic football, and like
hurling.
Hurling. It's like lacrosse. It's like cricket, but with 15 people on a pitch playing Aussie rules.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So
it's not like cricket. It's like
lacrosse. Got a bat and a ball. It's got a cricket ball and a bat.
But
it's a longer bat.
No one bowls at each other. It's like lacrosse.
Weird shaped cricket bat, like a smoothed off cricket bat, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. More like a field hockey stick, but battered. But you can catch the ball, you can pick it up, and you can hit each other like you can in AFL.
Tim, like if you ever get the chance to come to Ireland, you've got to time your visit to watch a hurling game at Croke Park.
Yeah,
86,000 people. And these guys, no lie, I went to see him. My brother-in-law is a hurler, like pretty good hurler back in the day. And he took me along. And these guys are massive. Like they are athletes. Mm. They're like probably like Aussie rule style. They're tall, massive guns, thighs like rugby players. They're like, and they sprint across the pitch, and they within like milliseconds they're catching the ball above their head, switching the stick and hammering it like 100 yards down the pitch to hit their own player who's also run about 30 yards to be in that place to like. Loses, but it's just the violence, the speed. Yeah, it's
a fast 70-minute game, and there could be 70 scores. It could be like 35-36.
Fastest field sport in the world, I think.
Mm.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah. You're just standing there going, "Oh my, this is like I've never seen humans do this. This is like the nearest you get to primeval, like." proper sport. There's no stopping and there's no like scrumming down and waiting for, you know, like American football is like 4 hours long and like they run for 2 minutes. It's like this is they're running for 70 minutes, hitting, smashing, elbowing, sticking the face.
Like, too. Aussie rules, they like there's no plays or timeouts. Like it's four quarters and if you score a goal, it goes back to the middle and you restart.
The bit I saw
throw it in and keep going. Like,
I saw Aussie rules in the MCG in Melbourne.
You did?
Yeah, and I remember they were redoing the ground at the time. I think they were putting an extension on, so there was only 60,000 people there instead of 100,000. And I remember these people brought out these massive flag. They looked like flags.
Banners.
And I thought, right, this is a pro sport, you know. And then out come the team, and they burst through the banners like kids at a school sports day. And I thought, this is brilliant. And they run through this, boosh, and then they run around for 70 minututes, just kicking the shit out of each other. Yeah,
it is professional sport, but the banners are actually made by the cheer squads. Which is kind of like an amateur, you know, mad fan base that the cheer squad, and they're under each goals. They wave all the flags and pom pons and stuff. But sometimes they have some pretty funny, like messages on the back, like just taking the piss out of something or whatever. And yeah, pretty entertaining. And they always have one on each side, one message each side. So they turn around before the game and show everyone. And yeah, it's a cool thing about Australian rules. And we sing a song after you win as well. So every team's got a song.
We won't meet you singing the Hobart AFC song, yeah.
I've got to go, lads.
Shit. Hobart AFC is shit. We beat them last year.
This is great. But yeah, I got to go. So I can leave you guys chatting if you want.
On that note, yeah, if you want to hear Tim sing his song. Yeah, we might need to put this theme tune. We've changed the theme tune this week to Tim's song of the his team winning. Yeah.
I'll send you a theme song.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'll catch you on Twitter or something. Good luck. Good to meet you, Tim.
Cheers. You too.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye bye. Bye bye.